League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
And we're back. It is another Monday night with the Monday Night Delight. Carla Dawson, I'm the boss. She is the gloss. We got Ron Culver behind the glass. Welcome in, Ron.
Ron, you should know. Ron's mad at me. He's not talking.
Well, he's a little upset with you, but he's going to overcome it. He has a long memory, but he'll be fine by hour number two.
Come on, Ron. Throw me a bone here.
I'll be fine by the end of hour two.
See, you can see him sulking over there. Earlier, you should know, Ron, the gloss was sulking a little bit. She came in looking for that Jason Witten football. She thought that, well, Jerry Jones, the boss of the Cowboys, had given Jason Witten a diamond encrusted football. Maybe the gloss deserves that. Why, Jason?
Where are the girl's best friend when she needs them?
So give the girl a diamond.
You're saying a diamond encrusted microphone, then?
Exactly.
That would work for you, would it not?
Mic drop. Yep.
Wow.
I wouldn't drop that mic, however.
Okay. Well, we have a lot to come this next hour. We're going to talk a little NBA when we return. The Celtics losing now to the 76ers with about 7 minutes remaining. Celtics down by double digits. So the 76ers might get back in the series or at least get one on the board and avoid the sweep.
But a double-digit lead is not safe in the NBA playoffs.
It is not safe, and the Celtics have already come back from 22 down, I believe it was, over the 76ers earlier in the series. So watch out for that one. We will keep you apprised there. And then later this hour, we will get a chance to visit with Tim Neverett of the Red Sox. He is the Red Sox play-by-play guy, and he is going to, well, host and talk about the Red Sox-Yankees series coming up, which is a really exciting series. Both the Yankees and the Red Sox playing great baseball today.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
So we will come back in just a minute and address that. When we return, we're going to focus first on the NBA. It would seem, despite the 76ers' current lead, that we have what is emerging is a Final Four. That we finally have a definition on what the Final Four team should be, and we will look at them and break them down when we return. You've been predicting it'll be Golden State and the Rockets for a long, long time. It would appear the collision course is now set.
I think it is. And the 76ers are hanging on for their life tonight.
All right. We'll cover all this when we return on The Boss and the Gloss of SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. Celtics have closed the gap to just 10 points. They trail the 76ers with 5 minutes remaining. They're trailing only by 10, so they have closed the gap. Celtics not done in this one.
No, it's going to be a game.
But in the NBA right now, it's really interesting. Let's talk about the Western Conference first, because we may have probably the two best teams in the league with the Warriors and the Rockets, and they look like they've got a commanding situation with 3-1 leads. But the series, for a little moment, I thought were sort of mirrors of each other. 2-0 leads by the favorite, and then the loss in Game 3.
And big, bad losses big, by bad both losses. The Warriors and the Rockets on the road.
They were embarrassing losses for teams of such pedigree and teams of such talent. To lose that Game 3 the way they both lost it. I mean, I haven't seen the Warriors been taken to town like that in a long time, it feels. And yet then they came back and bounced back in a big way in Game 4.
But, you know, there's a secret sauce behind both of those, which I think is really great.
Yes.
Not a secret sauce to the letdown. That is, you know, by both teams. But you look at Houston. So they had a beatdown in Utah. I mean, it was embarrassing and terrible. And James Harden called Eric Gordon, sixth man of the year, Eric Gordon, And he said, hey, I want to know after the game. He said, what are you seeing on the court? And Gordon says, oh, I'm seeing that Utah's really aggressive. And Harden said, no. I'm seeing that you need to play your game. Like, just go out there and play your game.
Take some shots. Be more aggressive.
Yeah.
He pushed him.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, Harden was right, because when you've got Eric Gordon on the court playing his game, I mean, everything changes.
Yep.
Everything changes. And he can guard anybody, and he can put up 25 points, no problem. But so after this talk with Harden, which just really what it did was really got his confidence going, and he was thinking more like a sixth man instead of all this pressure he was putting on himself. So here's his line in game three after, I mean, the game after the big letdown in Utah. 8 of 13, 4 of 8 three-pointers in 30 minutes. He was fabulous. So I think, you know what? That's what an MVP does. That's what a leader does. When you see someone on your team, not even someone in the starting lineup, that needs to be picked up, that needs to play their game, you make sure it happens.
And another guy who stepped was Clint Capella.
I
gather you're a fan. You're impressed.
I am a fan. And I've been a fan since he got here.
No, I'll say this. I've been listening to you now for the whole season, and you've been on the Capella
God
bandwagon.
Bless you.
I've been listening to you all year long. And you've been on his bandwagon for some time.
I am loyal. I'm annoyingly loyal,
yes.
But I'm loyal.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, how many basketball players do you know in the NBA from Switzerland? Let's just start there.
You got that one. Absolutely.
Well, and you know, he has been able to be under the tutelage of Akeem Olajuwon, Akeem the Dream, Hall of Famer. And he is a workhorse. He's put on the weight, and he has been working with Akeem on footwork, on, you know, just being a really agile big man.
And that he is. He really moves well, and particularly on the defensive side of the ball.
What I love about him is you've got James Harden and CP3, of course. They bring the best out in each other, for sure. But Capella is that glue. He is continuing to just ascend. And he has outplayed Rudy Gobert so far in the Jazz series, who is a veteran. He outplayed Carl Anthony Towns in the Timberwolves series. I mean, these are not role players. These are not no names. These are NBA stars.
No, guys with real pedigree. I mean, Anthony Towns, a lottery pick.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these are stars for their prospective teams.
Sure.
And Clint Capella is taking him to school. I love it.
And particularly at the defensive stops at the end of that game in game four.
Six blocks last night. Six.
It was heroic. I mean, it was a real step out moment for him. He was in the spotlight. I thought it was a real moment for him to shine.
He had his mojo going. I mean, he will get easily from 2 to 4 blocks in a game and against, you know, guys like Gobert and Carl Anthony Towns. But six last night, like, he was in a zone that could not be broken. And I don't know if anyone was watching at the very end. He was like, He-Man Thor, like, I am man, hear me roar, as he should be.
Well,
I mean, you don't see Capella like
yes,
that.
Yes, no, but it was a coming out for him, I think. I mean, people in Houston have watched him all season. He's been outstanding, and he plays so well with Harden, the way they pass the ball, and Harden gives him alley-oops. But on the defensive side,
by the way.
Yes, there are awesome plays that they do, and they do them seamlessly. No look, they're just
and
awesome.
Over and over again. And it's like, don't the opposing teams have anything to defend him? I don't think they can.
Seemingly unstoppable.
Right. It's really, really, he is one of the pieces, along with Eric Gordon, that are not the James Harden CP3 that you think about, but are, you know, Capella is part of that trio. The Harden, CP3, and Capella are some ridiculous number. When they all play, they're like 48-5.
Yeah, Rockets just don't lose with those three.
They don't lose with those three. That chemistry is not to be believed.
All right, on the other side of the Western Conference, Golden State, they had that embarrassing loss, Game 3, and then they rebounded, and Kevin Durant really turned his game around.
He turned his game around, and I'm going to go back to the exact same leadership that we saw for the best record in the West with the Rockets,
yep,
is now being repeated in the second best record in not only the West, but the NBA in Golden State. So they got embarrassed in New Orleans, their first road game in game three. And Draymond Green sent Durant, KD, a text at 4 a.m. that basically said, hey, you just need to be yourself out there. And Draymond says, you know, I'm seeing a problem. I mean, Kevin's not playing aggressive. He's not playing his game. And Durant's response to the text was, I got it. And what happens? 38 points.
He exploded.
He exploded, and he played Kevin Durant type of ball. And you know, he said later, you know, after the game, he said, it meant so much to me. I didn't take it as anything, but my teammates have my back. Like, they want the best out of me. And he said, when you know you have that support from your team, which he didn't have in OKC, let's not even go there. I mean, look what it did to him. It unleashed the beast.
Well, it's amazing to me as I look at that Golden State team. It's like Kevin Durant, that guy, that explosive player that we saw in Game 4, he was in the back pocket of the team. They needed him, so he came out and put on 38 points. But they didn't need him. Some nights they don't need him. Oh, Curry will light it up. Someone else will light it up. They just have so many weapons, was Durant's night in Game 4. They needed him, and they came through with it.
Well, and it's kind of like watching Kerr's press conference after the game, and I didn't get to watch the whole game. I was listening to it, but I was like, wow, Curry must not have had a great night, because I heard Kerr saying, you know, he's still got to get his timing down. You know, he missed such significant time. I mean, he had 23 points. This is like, we're worried about Curry with 23 points.
A quiet night for Curry.
What an awesome luxury in Golden State.
Yeah.
Got to credit them for developing these players, though, and Kerr for really developing a system around this talent that he has. Wow.
All right, developing a system is happening in Boston, but they are trailing the 76ers now by 12.
Trailing the process, yeah.
And under 3 minutes left. Yes, so the process, Philadelphia looking to be in command. They've got a 10-point lead with 2:49 to play. But in this series thus far, this Celtics 76ers series, the Celtics young guys have really stepped up. Jason Tatum is impressed. Jaylen Brown is impressed. They have, Rozier has played well.
Rozier has been money.
It's got to be frustrating for the 76ers. When you look at the 76ers, they drafted Markus Fultz. The Celtics have Jason Tatum. That trade does not look very good. Here we sit a season later.
And that's been a subject line this week, of course. But, you know, honestly, not totally fair to Markel Fultz, because he had this shoulder injury, which he basically missed the entire season, all but 14 games.
Yep.
And so I think the jury is not yet out on Markel Fultz. It's kind of like what happened to Ben Simmons last year as well. Like, this is his rookie season currently now. So I think with Jason Tatum, the jury is out. He is unreal. And Boston looks like geniuses. And credit Brad Stevens as well to be able to develop a rookie and bring him along like that. But for Markel Fultz, I say we've got to give him time. And, you know, it's unclear what's going to happen there. But he needs time. We don't have enough of a body of work.
This is sort of a redshirt season for him, no doubt. But when you look back, there were the Celtics with the number one pick overall. And the big trade, the Celtics got the number three pick, which went on to be Tatum, and they got a lottery pick from the 76ers. 76ers land Fultz. The one thing I would say in defense of the 76ers is it was universal support that Fultz was the number one pick in this draft. Everybody thought so. Now, Danny Ainge did not. His mantra that time was, we think we can get the player we want back at number three. He traded back. He got the guy he wanted in Tatum. And at this point, it sure looks like the Celtics got the better end of the deal.
Chalk one up for Danny.
Trader Danny, a big win there.
Right.
Now, he also added Hayward. He added Kyrie Irving in the season, who have not yet played. But the Celtics looking great with the offseason. Tonight, it looks like the 76ers will pull this one out. They lead by 12 with 140 remaining.
Yeah, looks like they will. And let's not also underestimate, too, Brad Stevens coming to Boston.
Stevens has been a godsend for the Celtics, really helped develop these young players. All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk a little NFL. Bucky Brooks from the NFL Network will join us, and we'll talk about the draft and the offseason and all developments in the NFL here on the Boston The Gloss.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
O'Reilly Auto Parts is highly trained, friendly, and knowledgeable parts professionals. They'll help you find the parts you need to get the job done right the first time. O'Reilly Auto Parts is dedicated to helping you get back on the road fast. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Bucky Brooks of the NFL Network. Bucky, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
So, Carl and I have followed your mocks, really, for the last 2 or 3 months. We've been tracking, and your mocks were pretty on par. I mean, we were impressed by how accurate they turned out to be.
It's so crazy. Thank you, one. But it's so crazy that people pay attention to mock drafts. I think as a scout, it is always hard to really delve into the mock draft world because mock drafts are kind of what you think other teams think.
Right.
Whereas when you're dealing with big boards or top five lists or things of that nature, that's really, really what I think. And I think sometimes it can get lost in translation, what you really think about a player, because you have them associated with certain teams in a mock draft.
So we're talking to Bucky Brooks of the NFL Network. So, Bucky, when you look at this, just look at the first round maybe. Were there any things that stood out to you as really big surprises? What surprised you most in that first round?
Baker Mayfield going number one.
Yep. Oh, I'm right in your same camp. Tell us your thoughts, Bucky.
Baker Mayfield going number one is a big surprise because it goes against all of the traditional norms that are typically associated with the draft. Typically, when you take a quarterback at number one, he has certain prototypical dimensions that he must hit physically. He also is a guy that has exceptional character. He also is a guy that shows clearly multiple times that he is the best player on the field. And Baker Mayfield, what I believe, you have a really good college player, a guy who is surrounded by a tremendous amount of talent at Oklahoma. He certainly can play and win in that capacity, but typically the number one player in the draft is a guy that elevates all the others. I believe Baker Mayfield is a guy that needs the rest of the team to elevate him. When I did the comparison during my scouting report, I kind of compared him to Case Keenum. Case Keenum played great in Minnesota, but we're not sure that Case Keenum will be the same player in other locations. I think it would be interesting to see how Baker Mayfield plays out when he gets into the National Football League and has an opportunity to start.
Are you worried about him at all going to Cleveland where quarterbacks go to die?
I mean, I'm worried about him a little bit, obviously, but I think John Dorsey and the crew, they've done a good job of surrounding him with big-time talent. The thing that I'm really worried about is, will he legitimately beat out Tyrod Taylor? Tyrod Taylor is a guy that you can say what you want to about him. His touchdown-to-interception ratio is only behind Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers the last couple of years. He helped Buffalo go to the playoffs for the first time in 17 years. He is not a slouch. So when you put Baker Mayfield in that environment, and if you have a true competition, I'm worried that he won't beat him out straight up. But now, when you're number one pick, all of the things are in your favor. We will see whether Cleveland wants to play a young quarterback or if they're going to go the route of a veteran to try and get them some wins and kind of get off this snide that they've been on the last few years.
Well, Bucky, we're going to be best friends because all your thoughts on Baker Mayfield is exactly how I have felt for months. But let's talk about something happy in the quarterback department, which you nailed it with Sam Darnold going number three to the Jets. And it seems to me that out of all the newly drafted signal callers, he's in the best situation of anybody with the Jets and having Josh McCown as a willing mentor. Your thoughts on Darnold?
I love Sam Darnold. I think Sam Darnold has an opportunity to be a really good quarterback. He's young. He's only 20 years old. And I don't think a lot of people realize that he has only played the quarterback position for about four and a half years. Mm-hmm. He is a guy that came from San Clemente. He was an outside linebacker very early in his high school career, and then he made the switch over the quarterback. And so what you're getting is a guy that is still trying to learn the position. When he gets it all down, I think he will have an opportunity to be a great player as a next.
We're talking to Bucky Brooks of the NFL Network. You've got to stop this because Carla's over here doing her happy dance.
I am doing a happy dance.
Everything that she says, and she walks the halls and makes these claims, and now you're affirming her points of view.
Yeah, Bucky, we are BFFL for sure. This is the best.
So another pick that she liked, I shouldn't tell you this, but another pick she really liked was Lamar Jackson going to the Ravens. How do you see him fitting in on that team, and what's the timeline for him to be on the field with the Ravens?
I think he's a great fit with the Baltimore Ravens. Part of the reason he's a great fit is everything around him suggests that they're going to max out what Lamar Jackson could be at the next level. When you look at the coaching staff, Marty Moorwig and Greg Roman, both guys have experience developing and nurturing dual-threat quarterbacks. Marty Moorwig dealt with guys like Steve Young, Donovan McNabb. He also worked with Michael Vick. And then when you go to Greg Roman, he worked with Colin Kaepernick. And so you have an infrastructure already in place that is comfortable working with that kind of quarterback. They understand how to tweak the offense to really cater to him. The second thing that really makes me optimistic about Lamar Jackson being successful in Baltimore is Ozzie Newsome and the Baltimore Ravens typically do a great job of building teams around their top players. They would put him in a situation where he would succeed. They were surrounded with the right weapons on the outside. Look, this guy is more than a dual-threat run-around quarterback. I think anyone who looked at him really on tape should have saw a guy that has natural talent, an explosive athlete, a guy that can make plays, and someone that got better and better each year in a pro-style system. I think he's going to be a star in the league.
We're talking to Bucky Brooks. You can read him on NFL.com. So, Bucky, shifting gears, looking ahead, Dez Bryant remains unsigned. Where is the best fit for Dez?
You know, it is really, really tough right now because the Cowboys didn't do Dez any favors by letting him go late. All the money is gone. All the spots kind of filled up. And you just had the draft where all these teams are fascinated by the young guys that they just acquired. However, I still believe there are a handful of spots that Dez Bryant could go and be a big-time contributor. The first spot would be the San Francisco 49ers. They don't have a true number one receiver. You have Jimmy Garoppolo, who is still trying to find his way as a franchise quarterback. The best way to help him elevate his game is to put someone out there that can make plays. Even though Dez's game has declined a little bit, he still can make plays in the right system with a good play caller, put him in spots to be successful. The next spot I would say is the Buffalo Bills. The thing about the Buffalo Bills, they got the young quarterback and Josh Allen that they drafted, but they really don't have a legitimate star in the wide receiver core. Kelvin Benjamin was a former number one pick. He has made some plays, but he's not necessarily a superstar. Dez Bryant, if he's able to tone down his personality, he'll be a great fit on that team from a playing standpoint. It's just a matter, can you take Dez Bryant and fit him into a locker room that is trying to really be a blue-collar locker room? That will be the challenge when you think about bringing Dez Bryant into Buffalo.
Would you think about bringing him into Houston with the Texans? Because, he could come in. You've got DeAndre Hopkins, who will draw double teams, and then that opens up things for Dez a little better.
I mean, I think so, but here's the thing that the Houston Texans have done. They have DeAndre Hopkins on the outside. They have Will Fuller, who's a speedster, on the other side. And then they have a handful of slot receivers, whether it's Ellington or Braxton Miller. They drafted a kid, Kiki Coty, who can play in the slot, who is super fast. I don't know if Dez necessarily fits in. I like the premise. I just don't know. It's kind of crowded there. I don't know if Dez would want to go to a place where maybe he's third or fourth fiddle based on the way that offense is already established with Deshaun Watson in the center.
We're talking to Bucky Brooks of NFL.com. So, Bucky, will Eric Reed play in the NFL this year?
You know, it's tough because Eric Reed is tied closely to Colin Kaepernick.
Yep.
In terms of the way people viewed the protest and the players really speaking out. And so, unfortunately for him, he kind of has a black mark on him. We've heard about the reports coming out of Cincinnati. They asked him to stance on the national anthem and what he would do prior to games and the like. And so I just feel like we may not see Colin Kaepernick and we may not see Eric Reed for a long time in the National Football League, if ever.
Mm. That's too bad. He's a real talent. His brother Justin's going to be in Houston, so there'll be some member of the Reed family. Okay, Matty Ice, our first $100 million man in the NFL, $30 million a year, $100 million guaranteed. Do you like it?
I do like it because I like what the Atlanta Falcons have done with Matty Ice. When you look at Matty Ice and the success that he's had, he's definitely one of the top quarterbacks in the league. We saw him just come off an NFL MVP season. He led the Falcons to the Super Bowl. He has made it to the playoffs 6 times in 10 seasons. He has a 4-6 record, which you don't like. But he got them to the Super Bowl, and he played really well doing it. The thing that you have to do is now that you have him as a $30 million quarterback, yes, he has to up his game, but the Falcons have also surrounded him with enough talent where he should be able to elevate his game. Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu on the outside, first-round pick, and Calvin Ridley. Offensive line is solid. You have multiple running backs that can get it done. Matty Ice has the offense that you dream of if you're a franchise quarterback. It is on him to make sure that offense is always putting up 28 to 30 points a game because that team is built offense first, defense plays from ahead, meaning that they play downhill, they rush the pass because the offense has jumped out to an early lead. I think Matt and Ryan is certainly worthy of being a $30 million quarterback.
Well, you heard it from Bucky Brooks. Bucky, thank you so much for joining us. Matt Ryan has all the tools. He surely does.
Anytime we argue, I'm calling Bucky.
Oh, yeah.
He's on my
We argue all the time, and you took her side on every debate across the NFL. How could you do this to me?
You're the best, Bucky. Can you come back on tomorrow?
Yeah.
No. You know what? Call me anytime. Call me anytime, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
All right. Talk to you soon.
That's Bucky Brooks of NFL.com. And when we return, we'll cover other topics in the NFL. We'll also ask the Gloss what it means to the Raiders to have signed Derek Johnson, the outstanding linebacker from the Kansas City Chiefs, when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, I've promised the world that you are going to weigh in on why the Raiders' decision to sign, perhaps over the hill, Derek Johnson to their team was a good one. I mean, Derek Johnson, great career. I do not mean to discount him. He has been one of the best linebackers, maybe a Hall of Fame linebacker, after a great career with the Kansas City Chiefs.
You probably can't hear her right now because this is a non-Raider show.
Oh, now Mr. decides
suddenly
to talk
Ron
to
is
me.
Speaking.
He has ignored me for the first 45 minutes of this segment, and look at this.
For listeners who are wondering what's going on, I'm not sure that I can explain it. There was some kind of severing of the relationship that happened between the Gloss and Ron before the show. I think there's the – well, you're the
– It's tension. AFC West rivals. That's
is that what it is? Okay.
I'm AFC a princess West. Of darkness, and he is a lowly lightning bolt. That's how it goes.
The Chargers.
The true weapon of the god of gods.
The lightning bolt. All right, well, okay. But your Raiders have picked up Derek Johnson from the Chiefs, an in-division rival, and you think he's going to be
interesting.
The best years of his NFL career are behind him, but he can be an influence.
Well, now.
Okay.
He's not right.
You've got a more optimistic perspective.
No, I do think he is, obviously, he's a 13-year veteran, and he's only played with Kansas City. And to go to Oakland, I mean, their biggest, fiercest rival is going to be interesting in and of itself. But they signed him to a one-year $3 million deal. But what I love is the chemistry between John Gruden and Derek Johnson. And just to clear the air with what happened in Kansas City, Andy Reid loved this guy. He was very well. Derek Johnson was very well loved in Kansas
City. By all accounts, he's a leader. He's a competitor. And he was making a big difference on the field for many years.
Absolutely. And I think what they wanted to do in Kansas City, they want to get younger, they want to get faster. And so they offered him a coaching job. I mean, they wanted him to stay on the staff. But he just felt like, and Gruden asked him this in the interview, he said, why at 35 years old, you can sunset into your career, like you can be done. And Johnson's answer was, you know, I've got a fire still burning. Like I can still play at a high level and I can prove that to you. And he just kind of saw Gruden's face light up. I mean, that is John Gruden speak right there.
Well, and face light up. You can see Gruden. He probably shaped his eyebrows went up. He did that whole Chucky expression.
He did the Chucky. But also, look at this. John Gruden is in the same situation as Derek Johnson. He left a very steady job in the booth for Monday Night Football, and he's got to now prove himself all over again. So I think there was a little bit of mano a mano going on between the two men. They really bonded. And when Derek Johnson left that interview, he said, I knew I was going to get an offer because I gave him my honest answers and he could absolutely relate because he's in the same boat as I am.
He's got a little fire in his belly left as well.
Right. And I think not only would Derek Johnson will bring to the Raiders, I mean, they obviously need so much help in every area, but especially the defense. But also with the drafting of Arden Keyes, super talented guy out of LSU, a lot of off-field issues. And they're planning on Derek Johnson kind of being his mentor, his grounder. And, you know, he'll be a great veteran for a lot of these young guys that Oakland brought in.
Well, that's an interesting point you raised because so much of that Raiders draft depends upon two defensive tackles who are high-risk picks. Arden Key had off-the-field issues. Mm-hmm. That's his risk. Nobody denies his talent. He's a first-round talent. Maurice Hurst, a first-round talent they took as a defensive tackle. He has health issues, a heart condition that made him slip in the draft. But if those two guys can play, that really changes the makeup of this Raiders defense. They're tough in the middle. That would be two strong defensive tackles who had first-round talent.
You're right. And think about what a brilliant move this is by Oakland. So as loved as Derek Johnson was in Kansas City, he also has an incredible knowledge of the Kansas City offense. And Oakland, since 2013, is 2-8 against Kansas City. So don't think they don't want a little intel from what's going on in the Kansas City offense.
Well, so Johnson, who was going to get hired by the Chiefs to be a coach, will now effectively go and help coach that Raider team.
Exactly, which is kind of what Gruden did when he left Oakland for Tampa Bay and then beat them in the Super Bowl. But, you know, also Derek Johnson has an incredible football intelligence. And Gruden laid out a potential path for his playing time, and that was really attractive to Johnson. It wasn't just like, yeah, we'll bring you on, we'll see how it goes. No, there is a plan for Derek Johnson in Oakland. So Ron doesn't want to hear this, but credit John Gruden, he's got it going on.
All right, you heard it from the gloss.
Sorry, Ron.
The Princess of Darkness herself.
Sorry, not sorry.
Okay, so if he's got another year to go, Derek Johnson, one guy who did hang it up, it was Jason Witten, the Hall of Fame, or
that's
presumably he will be a Hall of Fame.
Boys.
I'll tell you what, his career with the Cowboys, about as star-studded and clean and pristine, just his standing.
Diamond-studded, actually.
Everybody loves him. And yes, diamond-studded football. Pretty darn nice. He went out really as a class act. It's interesting the comments that came out about him across the league.
Oh, my God.
Guys like Bill Parcells coming back out to say that Jason Witten was what a football player ought to be. His work ethic, his day-in and day-out commitment to his team and his teammates, unparalleled. Cowboys send him off with really a blaze of glory.
Well, I mean, you look at what Jerry Jones said about him. He says, you're an inspiration to me as well as everybody who has ever said they were a Dallas Cowboy. And Jason Garrett, I mean, what gets better than this? He's simply the best example I know of what you want a football player and a person to be on and off the field. Wow.
Very strong.
Big time.
And now he goes to the booth, Monday Night Football. It is interesting.
What a gig. They love the Cowboys.
It's a big gig. And I think, in part, that was what motivated him. You know, there are only a few seats in the premier broadcasting booths. You've got each of the networks, you've got Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, but there are only so many seats. And to be in that booth, shoot, if somebody else had gotten the job, who knows when the next spot would have opened up. So Witten sort of, I think he had to take the bird in the hand that was available to him today. Who knows if he played another year or two, as he might have, whether that job would have been available.
Well, yeah, right. He's taking John Gruden's spot in Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
And you look at this, think about this. This is good for your boys, too. Three of the four lead analysts, NFL analysts, are from America's team.
Of course, as they should be.
Witten is going to take over Monday Night Football. Romo on CBS and Troy Aikman on Fox. Wow. And I think they all do a great job. And, you know, he beat out for this job Kurt Warner, Greg Olson, Louis Riddick, Booger McFarland, Randy Moss, Rex Ryan. That's a heady list.
And now it looks like Booger McFarland will go down and be a sideline reporter for Monday Night Football.
Which will be great.
So that team rounds out. You know, it was going to be Peyton Manning previously. Mm-hmm. There was all kinds of discussion. Jason Witten going into the broadcasting booth.
And has never called an NFL game.
Isn't that remarkable?
Yes, it is. But I guess it's because he's been in them.
Well, he has been in them, but it is a leap of faith that a guy can just go from the field to the booth. I know they must have had him do dozens of rehearsals and tryouts and get him to hone his abilities. But it's still a leap. That's a heck of a change to go and do what he's doing.
No, it is. But his play-by-play man, Joe Tessitore, who went through the interview process with all these guys, they auditioned, but he spent the day with them. He had each of the guys to his house. I mean, his thought is that the chemistry is the most important part. And he's right. So, and ESPN, I think, wants that on, you know, improved chemistry too. And they're going to get it.
Well, not everybody can make going into the broadcast booth look easy. Jason Witten surely will. You always did. It was just the leap that you've made to a national radio show overnight sensation. If Witten can have your success as fast as you have.
Oh, don't you think he's measuring against me?
I'm thinking he wants to be like the gloss.
Listen to the boss.
All right, somebody else who glossed it up tonight, if you haven't seen this, Tom Brady going out on the town with his wife, and he's got a tuxedo on that looks like a James Bond villain.
It's frilly. It's frillin'. A James Bond frillin', not a villain. Frilly.
Yeah, it's a little odd. I mean, Tom's had a tough wardrobe week. Earlier this week, there was a picture of him in a bathing suit. And it was on the bathing suit. Well, first of all, it was very, very tight, short bathing suit. And then it had pictures of his kids. And so that was a little odd. And now he's in a frillin', as you call it, tuxedo. So Tom may not do work. He claims his wife dresses him. His wife got him this bathing suit, and I'm sure he's going to claim that she got him the tuxedo. But for a guy who is so handsome, so presentable, so everything.
So studly.
So studly.
And he's frilling.
You'd think he'd do a little better.
I know. Wow. Look this one up. This is a good one.
Okay. He was interviewed this week. He's come out with a whole bunch of revelation. It was sort of interesting what he had to say. Among the things he had to say, well, the most notable to me was that he himself, Tom Brady, still had no idea why Malcolm Butler was benched for that Super Bowl. And so I guess the only conclusion we can draw is if Tom Brady does not know.
That's right. Nobody's knowing.
We're never going to know.
That's it.
Right.
Yep. I mean, it just kind of highlights the Belichick way.
Right.
No one's above the team. No one is sacred. Not even Brady.
Well, he feels perhaps a little underappreciated.
Well, he absolutely said that. He took the fifth.
Right.
That was rehearsed.
You know, I think that you go back and you look at Belichick, and I don't think anybody would say, well, there's two schools of thought in coaching. There's the stick and the carrot. There's a hard-edged coach mm-hmm. who drives you, beats you up to try to elicit better performance. And then there's the coach who puts the carrot in front of you, gives you a lot of positive reinforcement, tells you how great you are.
That's not Belichick.
That's not Bill Belichick. And so, therefore, a lot of players probably don't feel appreciated. And that's not what he's going to give you as a player playing for him.
And Jim Gray asked him, you know, are you happy with the Patriots? And he said his answer was, I think it was pretty honest. He said, I have my moments. Like, Belichick is not the easiest coach to play for.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised at his honesty because I don't think he usually is. But I wonder if the answer would be different if he was holding a Super Bowl ring from this past year. This year's football.
Well, that's interesting because, of course, winning heals all wounds. And
yes,
if they had another title, that would feel very different.
And I'm not saying he feels this way this year only. I think he has felt this way. But what you're just saying is they win.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't complain about it when it's working.
Right. You can say, I'd love to play for another coach for another team that's a little friendlier environment, kinder, gentler environment. Mm-hmm. But if you don't come away with the wins, then so what? I mean, he is a competitor. He would rather take a win than a happy environment any day.
Right. I think there's a lot going on in New England. I think that Tom Brady never got settled with the Jimmy G drafting in 2014. He didn't like that because he sees himself as ageless.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tom versus time. I mean, we see that. I think that's a little trouble in paradise. And I think all three of the talking heads in New England, you know, Tom Brady doesn't like that drafting of Jimmy G. Belichick saw Jimmy G as the future. Robert Kraft says keeping Tom Brady happy is my priority. So they're all not thinking the same. I think that's tricky.
Well, we shall see. You know, interestingly, the most important thing for Patriots fans is Brady has said, yes, he's going to keep playing. He's not retiring this year. He's got another couple of years left in him at least. So they can count on him for a little while longer. Shifting gears to the Cowboys, it is interesting. Dez Bryant now released. He's available. He's not yet signed. There were reports that the Ravens offered him a pretty good offer. He turned it down. He thought there was a better deal. Now we're sitting here post-draft. Dez is still unemployed. Yet across the league, there are a lot of players who are saying positive things, saying that he's still got game to go.
Really, that's true.
Cole Beasley has said he was a great teammate and has a lot of gas left in the tank. Former Redskin D'Angelo Hall says Dez can still play. He just needs to be in the right environment. So Dez is one of the last big offseason question marks looming for the NFL.
Well, and I do think what D'Angelo Hall said is true. I think he does have to adjust his game a little bit.
Yep.
Because the speed aspect, you know, with his injuries and his, you know, getting a little bit older, the speed is there, but not the Dez speed that we knew. But his yards after catch, his ability to muscle after a catch is what should be focused on. And there's a lot of teams that could pick up someone like that as a receiver in the slot.
You're right. I mean, his game was always more based on strength than speed and never more so than now. But a guy who could line up in the slot and run an option route to go down and sit down in the middle of zones and be a big target, don't think tight end per se, but some of the routes that a Jason Witten would run, he could run very effectively out of the slot.
And I love what Cole Beasley, his teammate, said about him. He said, you know, he's got all the tools and he's got a chip on his shoulder. I mean, he's going to be ready when he gets another shot. And he really was so effusive about just he's a great teammate. He wants others to do well. Supportive dude, good friend. I mean, it couldn't get better. So I think whoever gets him is going to be lucky.
All right, we shall see. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So each week I learn something new from you. No, but this is actually a really cool story.
This is cool.
Something done on behalf of Dwight Clark, the legendary wide receiver, the guy who made the catch.
The catch.
For the 49ers, and now has been diagnosed with ALS.
Against your boys, I might add.
He made that catch against the Cowboys. It was really a coming-of-age game when there was a turning of the guard, changing of the guard, where the 49ers really were ascending, and the Joe Montana era was starting.
Yeah, really ignited their string of Super Bowls. That was it.
But now Dwight Clark has ALS and is not probably long for this world. So there was a great reunion that took place at DePalatola's Ranch. Tell us who was there.
This was so cool. So there were 27 men, old teammates of Dwight Clark's, that came to Montana to Eddie DeBartolo's ranch and just had this gathering to share memories, to toast Dwight Clark and all of this. And there were so many surprises. I mean, all the people that there was, you know, Ronnie Lott, you know, Rice. I mean, they were all.
And a guy named Joe Montana.
Joe Montana, right. Well, Joe actually didn't make the trip.
Oh, he didn't.
He sees Dwight Clark regularly, okay. But he wasn't on this trip. But they came to the ranch, and for a lot of them, this will be the last time that they'll probably see him. So Eddie DeBartolo, who has been an incredible owner when he owned the San Francisco 49ers, bought them in 1977, has always been about the family, about the players. He paid for Dwight Clark to go to Japan for some experimental treatment. Listen to what he did over this 3 or 4 day trip. Ah, we're getting the music. But he had Huey Lewis made a surprise appearance because Dwight Clark sang some backup with Huey Lewis. He wheeled him out to the lawn at the ranch, which houses the original goalposts of the catch.
The original goalpost. That's a classic.
Oh my gosh, gotta love Eddie DeBartolo. DeBartolo is amazing.
All right, hour number one in the books. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.